This is Democracy in Crisis. I'm Baynard Woods.
And I'm Mark Steiner here for the Center for Emerging Media and the Mark Steiner Show. And joining us today is someone who has been on the Steiner Show for many years, Imara Jones, writer and on-air analyst who holds a degree from London School of Economics and is developing a new TV program for progressive millennials of color. Did I say that right? Millennials of color?
Close enough.
Imara, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Good. Really good to hear your voice as always.
Same here.
So, it's been a boring week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, it was Friday watching, I was there and watched Paul Ryan's press conference. And I mean, everyone in the place was just bowled over that they said they were going to walk away. I mean, the day before, the progressive conference was saying, hey, this is our chance. They're going to fail. We should bring back single payer. But everyone's like, oh, it's the Progressive Caucus. They're dreaming or whatever. And they're going to have some way to at least, they're going to have a vote tomorrow. The press, Sean Spicer was saying at 3 o'clock, they're going to have a vote at 3:30. And then they call a recess. He comes out and says, we're done. It was astounding.
What do you think the fallout of all this is, Imara?
It's clearly an administration in crisis, right? There's one school of thought that the crisis is intentional. Of course, Steve Bannon, that's his school of thought, that everything is so terrible that anything that is chaotic and disrupted is good.
Right.
And then there's another school of thought, which is that it's bad. And I think that from a governing standpoint, it's bad. For me, what's most important is the fact that it looks like we don't have a division between the legislative branch and the executive branch anymore. We have a Speaker of the House who seems totally willing to subjugate his constitutional role, and he has a constitutional role. We have to remember he is third in line for the presidency, to totally blur the lines between the executive and the legislative branch, which hasn't happened before. Even in other years where there's been a president and a Speaker of the House from the same party, there's still a sense that there is a separation. That separation seems to be gone, and that has a lot of bad implications for our democracy, as we've seen both on the healthcare bill and the way that they moved it through in 3 weeks. And also, as we were chatting a bit before, we went on air about Russia. And I think the second way in which it's problematic and shows a weakness is that I just think that it underscores the fact that Paul Ryan's just not that good.
Yeah, the idea that Ryan was supposed to be this brilliant policy wonk, it was just like, where did that idea ever come from? He's never demonstrated any ability.
No, I mean, so much of it is, one, he looks the part and he sounds the part. And so a lot of people think that he is the part. I mean, a lot of journalists, they don't know anything about policy. So because he sounds like he knows something about policy, they say he knows something about policy. Because he's put out documents that are called policy documents, they think that he's a policy document. And he's good looking and charming and personable and affable. And so all of that together got him a certain image. And of course, he's been put forward by people on the right because they need a person like him to be willing to do a lot of the dirty work of dissembling things that help progressive causes and people of color and advance the cause of justice, but who doesn't look that way. So I think that he has served a useful purpose. But, you know, I have been a part of big votes in my previous time in the Clinton administration and also have worked on the Hill before. I've been around for big votes. I know what big votes look like. And I'd never seen a speaker who didn't know how many votes they had.
Right.
Interesting.
It's a basic part of the job to know how many votes you have. And for them to say, like, as I told someone the other day, you know, I never heard Nancy Pelosi go, well, I've got anywhere between 5 and 35 votes short, and I don't know, you tell me, which was kind of what he was doing, is unheard of. I mean, first of all, her father would roll over in his grave because he taught her how to count votes a long time ago.
Tommy
but
D.
Second, yes. That's right. But secondly, for a speaker to not know how many votes they have is pretty astounding. And it underscored for me that he just clearly is not good in his job.
Well, let me ask about that, because, I mean, you said that there's this lack of separation between the you know, the executive and the legislative branch. And then Trump, though, makes this point of coming out to say, watch Judge Jeanine. And the first thing Judge Jeanine says is Paul Ryan must step down, leading people to wonder that is he caving too much or does Trump want to get rid of Ryan, do you think?
I think that Trump likes to manage through uncertainty.
Yes, right, exactly.
And so I think that that's managing through uncertainty, because the day before he said, oh, no, Paul's great. He's great. A lot of people who I respect, Yamiche Alcindor from the New York Times, reported that, you know, she was hearing from the White House consistently after the vote that he and the staff were supportive of Ryan. And then to send out that tweet just does the opposite. And that's the way he likes to manage. He likes to keep everyone around him fearful and off balance, because it's the way that he maintains control. It's kind of Nixon-esque. So that's just what he likes to do. So I don't think we can read any too much in that. I think that he knows on some level that he can control Ryan, and that's pretty clear. And so he would never want to give that up for someone that he doesn't know if he has that power over them, I don't think.
And for, you know, there's so many pieces here that I just, the politics of this country. What we're seeing here is something really interesting. Just before we get into any specifics about Russia and healthcare and net privacy and all the things that have happened in the last few days, and the frightening climate change environmental announcement by Trump, is that people have written, especially on the left, about the friction inside the Republican Party and how it's internally chaotic and falling apart. And in some ways, I think that misses the point. The point is that this election has, A, laid bare the internal contradictions inside the Republican Party, which is probably two or three parties inside that one tent. I mean, the Democrats are clearly two or three parties inside one tent, but it has forced people like Chuck Schumer to ally with the rebels on the left, because Trump has unified the opposition of everybody from liberals, moderate liberals, to the left and progressives in this country. And so that's the only reason Democrats at this point are really unified, is because they are unified against this move by the Trumpians and their dislocation inside their own party, Republicans, because Trump is not really a Republican anyway. So what I'm saying, this is laid bare, I think, and laying bare what I call the fragility of American politics. That things could unravel. I mean, they might not, but things could very easily unravel in the Republican Party and in the Democrats as well in the coming years. Because of the Trump's winning on the heels of Obama and what Obama did to unearth the depth of racism in America and that racial divide in our country and how it played out in this election. I think I'm watching the demise of American politics in some ways, at least for our period of time. That's what I'm seeing in all of this.
A couple of things. One, I don't know if that's the case. I'm not even that old, but I've heard that probably since the 90s, right? There was a feeling that things were coming apart. You know, there was the militia movement. You know, someone tried to kamikaze attack the White House with Bill Clinton in it. There were these accusations that Hillary Clinton had like killed her best friend and Branch Davidians. Like, it felt like that the country was on edge. I guess what I'm saying is that I agree with a lot of the forces that you identified. How close or far we are to the edge is a question mark. We won't know until we cross a certain threshold whether or not that's the case. So that's just one thing. But I would also make an argument. I think that the fragility of the politics is probably because we have too much of a corporate influence on politics. And so that is what makes the democracy fragile. But I would also say that I actually think the Democrats are far more coherent as a governing party than the Republicans are. I think the Republicans don't have a governing philosophy. I think that, for instance, if the Democrats were in power, that the fight would be over the ways to reform healthcare, not whether or not we should have healthcare. Right? There's a fundamental split in the Republican Party on that. And there are a lot of other things. I think that the disagreement in the Democratic Party is about corporate wing versus populist wing. But policy-wise, from the platform that they just put forward, even the way in which Tom Perez and Ellison have come together and identified some key policies to rally around, I actually don't think that policy-wise, there's a lot of ferment in the Democratic Party. I think that there is one when it comes to corporate versus populist wings of the party about control, about tone, about direction, about structure. There are a lot of other things, but I actually don't think that policy-wise there's that big of a disagreement.
And I think it's a lot deeper than that. And I think this is deeper than I've ever seen it inside the Democratic Party or the Republican Party in my political life and in my whole life. I just think that it came out during the election between Bernie and Hillary.
Yeah.
And I think it's still there, and I'm saying it's dormant, and it's dormant because of Trump.
Which we're seeing on the right, that they now seemed unified when they were all just anti-Obama.
Anti-Hillary, too.
Right, anti-Hillary. But now, right. And they still can't let go of that. They're still obsessing over Obama and Hillary and can't address what their new reality is yet either. But, I mean, what worries me is that they actually will be the ones to become united the next time.
Which they?
The Republicans. Oh. The next time a bad thing happens, you know, it's amazing that we haven't had Freddie Gray yet in the Trump administration during this time, that we haven't had any kind of mass shootings, attacks. They all tend towards authoritarianism, except maybe the little bit of the libertarian wing. And so I worry that they unite around the strongman when something bad happens, and that's when the left sort of loses coherence, where we almost had a revolution here, but we had the Democratic leadership of the city greatly mishandling what could have been, you know, an opportunity.
So what do you all think about about what's just been happening? I mean, so the piece around that you've been covering, Baynard, you know, from everything from Russia to and the whole Russian thing at the moment being kind of really, you know, you got the right-wing press and the liberal press saying Sally Yates was silenced, and the right-wing press saying, no, Trump says she wasn't silenced when it comes to testifying, the role Nunes has, the man heading the Intelligence Committee. I mean, you've seen that unravel along with the latest announcements that Trump has made about the environment. I mean, it's a lot that's happened in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should talk about Nunes for a minute, because it's just been insane. So, like, I was at the hearing on Monday, and they questioned Comey and Rogers for at length for the entire day. Then the next night, evidently, Nunes was in a Uber with a senior staffer and jumped out and ran to the White House grounds to view this intelligence. If you're that Uber driver and you're listening to this, get in touch. We'd like to talk with you. You know, and then went the next day without talking to any members of the committee and gave this information to the White House, which seems bizarre that it didn't come from the White House in the first place. I mean, he got it on White House. It's an insane story. So today he was again being super dodgy with the reporters, not to answer any questions about it and about why he canceled the Yates. I mean, so what Trump said is, we didn't tell Yates that she couldn't talk. But Nunes nevertheless canceled that hearing. She was supposed to be speaking right now as we're talking to the Intelligence Committee. So if they didn't have any collusion with Russia, they're acting insane about it. It's like the cop tells you to walk a straight line and you're sober and you're just like, oh, and you can't walk straight anymore. It would be the only explanation, because they're acting like lunatics. Yeah, and you said, well, before we got on air, that you think you're starting to think that there's a there now.
Yeah, because they're acting like it, right? I mean, I think that there are possibly two things at work. And one is that under normal circumstances, if there was an investigation going on and the leaders of the party were relatively sure that there was nothing that was happening, no there, they would allow for processes and the investigation to proceed without a problem, right? Because they ultimately know that it's going to go to nowhere. And secondly, again, this goes back to my point about there not being any separation. And if there were a possibility of a there, like what happened in Watergate, you would want to be able to try to control what the conversation is about it and the direction of it, which is why Republicans agreed in Watergate, even though they were in the minority, to the Watergate Commission, right? Because they knew that they had to, if there was something there, they needed to be able to get out in front of it and to control it. That's what would happen normally. So that's if there was nothing or if there was something. Well, now we have a case where if there was nothing, then at a minimum, if you were Nunes, you would just want to go through the motions, be quiet, and let it fade out. But they're not acting like that, right? They're acting as if there is the possibility of a there, and that they've got to undermine it. And what's interesting to me is that I could see if that was what was Trump was doing all along, by calling for various different types of investigations. Last night, of course, he sent out a tweet saying that now we ought to investigate Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton for some uranium. God only knows. He's come up with a new thing on Russia that should be investigated. And so I can understand that. And somehow they've been able to now spread that again to the House, to the Congress, that same way of operating. And so I think that that combined with the fact that Adam Schiff, who is the ranking on the Intelligence Committee of Democrats, said that recently he's seen beyond circumstantial evidence that there may be a there. The reports about Flynn and the fact that he may be cooperating now with the investigation that was reported in the Wall Street Journal, it's beginning to look like that there is something there and they're acting like it. And the actions of Nunes underscores that.
And then Kushner, I mean, today it just came out.
That's right.
He said a couple days ago that, yeah, he had met with Kislyak. And then today,
right,
once he realized the investigating committee knew, he admitted that to meeting with a banker in Trump Tower. That was only today.
Yeah. And all of this is just, it's just mind-boggling, the whole thing. In so many ways, I think, you know, given the theme of this program, the democracy at risk, something about the way that the government is working now is posing a risk to democracy on a lot of different levels. This lack of distinction between the legislative branch and the White House, the possibility of foreign intervention in the government and that not being taken seriously, that being ignored. I think that those are two huge threats. And I don't understand why more is not being made of that.
You know, a lot of people, I think, their eyes and ears glaze over around Russia. Unless they're really for Trump or they really can't stand Trump. But why is it important?
It's important because we may have a person in the White House who did not get there on their own volition.
And only on their own volition, but by another country.
That's right. And that not only is it the aid of a foreign power, which is unconscionable, it's the very risk of democracy, but a power in which it is been alleged to which he is indebted, right? Where he owes them something, not only in terms of the election, but perhaps more. And that means that we would not have a democracy. We don't have a democracy if that's the case. So if in any way you care about the idea of democracy, that's a threat. And secondly, if you care about what he's doing, and I have to say, perhaps I shouldn't say this, but I have to say that if it is the case, and it's not clear that it is, I want to be very clear about that, that somehow that a foreign power helped to put Donald Trump in the White House, then everything about the election suddenly makes sense.
Right. And I mean, to add a little bit to that, I feel like Trump's parallels with Putin, his similarities with Putin are worry enough. And if he believes, even if it didn't happen, and he believes that, I mean, right now we're showing if Putin had interfered with the election, and we don't care, and he can convince half of the country that we don't care about it, that even if it didn't happen, it sure gives him a lot of incentive to manipulate the next election, either Putin or Trump. It doesn't, even if it didn't happen this time, and I agree that there is starting to be more and more evidence that there was something going on there, but it would give not investigating it thoroughly would give anyone open grounds to do it next time.
Yeah.
So where do we think this goes from here? Do we think it's going to, I mean, you've been there covering it. I've been reading about it, but you've been covering it. And Mark, you cover these things closely as well. I'm curious, you know, that you see the Democrats going, there needs to be an independent counsel or at least a commission or Nunes has to go and someone else has to take over. And it looks as if some Republicans are taking that seriously as well. In the House and Senate, especially the Senate. So where do we, even though this is a House deal right now, where do you all think this is going?
I mean, I think you partly answered it. It'll go to the Senate for sure. I mean, the Senate seems, and there are Republicans there like John McCain and Lindsey Graham who seem very interested in investigating this. You know, McCain had that dossier back prior to the election or either right after the election, and was apparently the one who gave it to Comey in the first place, but so that's one place that we'll go. Maybe an independent commission. I don't know.
One of the things that cracks me up when you just said that made me think of this. Maybe you guys think I'm a little crazy on this one, too. But I'll throw it out anyway. I think one of the biggest mistakes Trump made was biting McCain in the during the election. His attacks on McCain. McCain is very bright. He's very tough. He's very acerbic. And he loves to fight. And you can't just attack whether you agree with him politically or not, you can't just attack McCain and expect him to come back around. Well, McCain now has lots of stuff to come back around on, and he's like a bulldog. This guy will not let go of this thing. He said, you want to screw with me? Fine. I'm back. That's what I think is happening partially as well. Just on a personal level, a personal political level, I think that is what's going on. Because that, you know, Amara, you were inside for a while there. You know, so
yeah.
You know that personal political stuff is real, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know that it's real and I know that it fuels it. I also think that what makes politicians really powerful are the moments when their personal feelings and their ideological ones come together. And I think that for McCain, I think legitimately he is a cold warrior. He is a person who believes that he fights for and acts in the best interest of the United States, and he does not like Trump. And so those two things coming together, right? Those two things come together mean that he's dogged. And that investigation has been going on for a while, and it's been going on very, very, very silently. There have not been any leaks from the Senate unless they're leaking for a reason, like they leaked the Kushner thing because they wanted to get him to testify. It was pretty clear that he wasn't going to come willingly, so they leaked it in order to get him off the sidelines. So I think that it's definitely going to the Senate. I think we will end up with an independent commission. I know that the politics don't look like that now.
Right, right.
But I think that that's where we're going. I think we're going to end up there. We're going to end up
there. If you harken back 45 years ago, is that what it is? Yeah, 45 years ago, let's say, or 46, whatever that number is, to Watergate. It took a while for this to unravel.
2 years.
Right? Before it really exploded. Exactly. You said it tomorrow, 2 years. So, you know, so these don't move so quickly.
Right. I mean, think how long they kept investigating Benghazi. I mean, they're still investigating that and haven't found anything.
Depends who you ask, right?
and actually what's interesting about this is that, one, it's moving faster than Watergate. And the second thing is that remember that in Watergate, people often talk about, oh, it's bipartisan or whatever, but they didn't have the votes for impeachment until the tapes. And right before the tapes, they were about to roll up the investigation. They thought that it had just been, they were like, well, we've got these White House staffers and some people at the RNC, but that's pretty much it. And it was only until at the last minute, right before they were willing to close, when they were gonna close up shop on that investigation, that they realized that there were the tapes, and then the tapes proved the link, and then they had the votes for impeachment. So I think that it's important to remember that as well. That a lot of people are like, oh, well, there's only smoke here, there's no fire. But a lot of times these things in Washington are a slow burn because the people aren't complete idiots who are committing the crimes. And so they know how to obfuscate and obscure to make it difficult to see what's actually happening. And the point of the investigation is to uncover that.
Yeah, the smoke often comes from someone on the fire, I think.
That's actually true. Facts. That's a fact. Right.
Well, with that, it's been really great to talk with you today, Amara.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I mean, it went in a different direction than we thought, but I think that what we ended up talking about Russia really does highlight what this week is the threat to democracy. And the same dynamic that we described on Russia also happened on healthcare, and it's the reason why it went down. You didn't have an independent branch of government who was willing to be forthright with the president of the United States, and it led that to go off the rails.
So, and Amara Jones Mizadge, one more time, is a White House veteran in the Clinton administration and also in Congress, a writer and on-air analyst, and we're studied at the Lund School of Economics, and we're dying, I can't wait, for your thing to come through. Television
Thank you.
News program with the Millennials of Color. Is it still called, you don't, is it, have, we'll see what it is when it comes out, but I can't wait for it to come out.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
This is Democracy in Crisis. I'm Baynard Woods.
And I'm Mark Steiner.
Download us on iTunes or listen at your local Alt Weekly. Much love and grim solidarity.
Or cheerful solidarity.
Do not worry. Do not worry. Do not worry. Do not worry. Do worry. Obamacare will explode and we will all get together and piece together a great healthcare plan to the people. Do 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 worry. Do 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 worry.